Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You can find us online at speculist.com or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend? Welcome to Fast Forward Radio, I should say.
Just Fast Forward Radio. We're just going to just Fast Forward Radio. That's all we got tonight. So
it's an hour-long show called Fast Forward Radio. No guess.
No guess. You know, and that means we actually have to have something to say. You know, sometimes when you have a panel, it's pretty much, you know, we just turn the panel loose and, you know, we can almost, you know, get a cup of coffee kind of thing, because those guys are so brilliant that, you know, we didn't, you know, it wasn't that we had to, you know, we had to have questions and things like that. We had to have some things to bounce off for them, but for the most part,
yeah.
They,
mostly we were there to tell them when to stop talking, right? I mean, that was kind of like...
Exactly. We were more like moderators than the hosts or whatever, you know. So, yeah, it's a different animal than it's just us. So, I love World Transformed. I love the guests we had. I'm also excited about just visiting about the latest headlines and things tonight. So,
yeah, it's good to get back to the... Good to get back to the normal show, and I thought we would start out by doing quick reflections on the World Transformed. Let me set the stage for that by telling you something I got to do Friday, which I found very cathartic, and that I also think probably is indicative of what we can do with this kind of material going forward. Gosh, it's got to have been more than a year ago now. Michael Anisimov forwarded me an email request from Mensa, you know, the high IQ group, the people who are in the top 98% in the 98th percentile for intelligence. Well, they have a monthly get together in Denver, and they wanted someone to come talk to them about the singularity. So they had asked Michael over at Singularity Institute if he could recommend someone, and he said, well, you know, we don't have anyone in the institute per se, but there is a guy in Denver who would probably be happy to come talk to you. So anyway, he forwarded the message, and I've been like back and forth with these guys trying to find a date that would actually work, that worked for them, that worked for me, and spoke to them Friday evening. And what I ended up doing was, instead of just the singularity, I said, well, I'm doing this. I'm, as I was planning the program, the presentation to them, I was right in the heart of, we were doing the World Transformed. I said, well, listen, I'm doing this whole series talking about all these topics. So instead of just coming and talking about the singularity, why don't I come talk to you about these 10 major transformations? So this is a clever idea, Stephen. Summarize the World Transformed, all the ideas in it, in 45 minutes. They give me 45 minutes, right? I put PowerPoints together, and the thing that just about killed me on it is I put the whole presentation together, and I was very pleased with it, and knew generally what I was going to say about everything, and did a dry run the day before, and I thought, gosh, this is feeling like it's going to run longer than 45 minutes. I got about 2/3 of the way through, and I checked the time, and I was already at an hour. And I said, no, that's no good. So I had to keep paring it down, and got it down to just the bare nubs, and just talked fast, but managed to spit it out, managed to give all 10 transformations and at least some vague overview, or not vague, but very broad overview of both World Transformed 1 and 2. Talk about what these things are and what the impact of them might be, how they're going to affect our lives. And in a way, I think that might be a better way to do it, actually, having done it. I mean, I was completely exhausted at the end of it, and I barely had a voice. But it's like if you can put it all together and kind of, you know, look at it as one thing, that's a pretty good perspective, too, I learned. Anyway, it was quite well received.
It's too bad. You should have recorded yourself. We just roll the audio tape, you know.
We should have. I had two friends there. And originally I said, bring flip cameras and we'll make a Google video out of this. And then I said, nah, too much trouble. And you guys won't be able to pay attention to the talk if you do that. You won't really hear it because you'll be fiddling with video cameras. So never mind. But that would not have been a bad idea. Yeah, we had another week off, huh? Just
exactly.
I mean, do anything. I have to say, I was a little intimidated talking to Mensa. I mean, I don't know if you've ever encountered that group before. This is the first time I've ever met Mensa, you know. I mean, the thing that occurred to me, though, is that probably when you go to something like Singularity Institute, you're probably meeting people who could be in Mensa if they wanted to. At one point, my friend Ron was working the projector for me, and the thing was like, it was skewed. The picture was way off. It was like it was way up too high, and I thought, oh, gosh, we've got to really take this whole thing down, do this, and change this to get the scene right. And I started to say, Ron, you need to – and he just – I don't know what he did. He just, like, pulled one thing, and, like, it was perfectly centered. And this is, like, in the middle of the presentation. I said, dude, you are a genius. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to misuse that word. And they thought that was pretty funny, actually. Like, I don't know what term they use for us, right, because they weren't going to say it. But, you know, it was like, oh, look, the muggle is making a little genius
making
joke.
A little joke, yeah.
Yeah, he's attempting humor amongst us.
I was invited to a Mensa meeting once, but I couldn't find my way there. I got lost along the way. There was a sign that said Mensa left, and so I just went back home. You know,
anyway. Yeah, darn.
That's
unfortunate. I would never even try. I mean, to me, I thought, well, this is cool because I get to see what it's all about. But I otherwise would never have known.
Well,
so anyway, all that
just,
to say,
just out of curiosity, these very smart people. What was the reception to your talk?
Very enthusiastic. A lot of great questions. And they were sharp. I mean, when I got to things like asking if we, for example, when talking about ending aging, we're talking about sins, I mentioned that if you pulled all the deaths through natural causes, well, not natural causes, but all disease and all aging-related deaths out of the actuarial tables, how long do we live, right? And a woman just in the front row, she goes, no, probably about 650 years. And like, yeah, that's not
she
bad.
She had it already
that's,
figured out in her head.
Yeah, I mean, that's darn close, actually. I don't think most people nail it quite like that. And it was very well received. And it was great because some of the more challenging questions give me good fodder for preparing to talk to the next group that I talk to, and also ideas about things we can talk about on this show. And my enthusiasm for the topics, not well received in some quarters, people who want to say, you know, there are limits and you've got hubris and, you know, those kinds of responses. And you think, okay, well, I understand where you're coming from, and I want to be able to respond to that better maybe next time. But overall, it was a lot of fun, and it was, I would say, very, very well received. They want me to come back and talk to them again. So we'll see if that happens.
Sally in the chat room says if you remove age-related death, she would say that life expectancy to be about 120 years. Sally, I would just tell you that it depends on what neighborhood you're living in, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
well, no, it's a lot longer. I said disease and age. So at that point, it's if people only died from accidents and foul play, right? And those are the only things that are going to kill you at that point. I'm trying to think what else. Animal attacks. I guess that's an accident, right? But war, right? You know, catastrophes.
Right.
But anyway, if you calculate all that, it's actually about 700 to 800 years, depending on who's doing the math. And it's hard to figure out because the tables are skewed by the fact that people who are aging, significantly suffering the effects of aging, tend to have more accidents, right? So that has to be corrected for. People who are very sick tend to have more accidents, and so that has to be corrected for. But
I'm going to tell you, the world has never seen a person that with the wisdom of, you know, 100 plus years in a body that's 20, 30 years old. You know, that animal has never walked the earth yet, and
right.
So we just don't know. You know, I mean, a 20-year-old tends to get in, you know, do stupid things sometimes. And get themselves hurt that way. What if you you lived through those years and you're now 100 years old, but still physiologically 20 years old. Yeah, we don't know what that really looks like yet. So yeah, you're right. That seems like the math would be kind of hard to know.
It would be hard to know. But I'm comfortable saying it's a lot longer than 120 years. I'm comfortable saying.
Yeah, and Aubrey de Grey actually put the number nearer 1,000 years.
Okay.
But,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
What does he know? You know, listen to Aubrey or to me?
A thing or two about that subject, perhaps.
That's what it comes
yeah.
down to. So having, you know, spent 10 minutes of the show talking about that, any reflections, any thoughts on the world transformed, any of the particular topics that stand out in your mind or moments that that really kind of shine in your memory?
Well, you know, I thought that, like, one of the first questions asked in the entire series is a really, really good one. And that is, you know, World Transform 2, part one, first question, what assumptions must we avoid going
right.
forward?
Right.
And, you know, I think that can generate a huge amount of discussion. I think the main assumption is that we need to avoid is that the future is going to be just like the present, except for this one little change. And that's,
right.
you know, basically all science fiction, you know, even our particularly thoughtful science fiction tends to be, you know, the present skewed just slightly in this one way. We've got
right.
this one invention that, you know, and the world has changed because of this one thing that's different. And you know, give the guys a break. You know, they only have an hour and a half to tell a story. And so, you know, one invention is maybe all that. The implications of one invention is all they have time to talk about or to think about in a movie. But that's what you tend to see in science fiction. And so we don't expect the future to be like that. We expect there to be an interaction of a huge number of different developments, any one of which can completely change the world. So, you know.
It's that convergence that we talk about,
exactly.
right? It's all that stuff coming together, making things almost – unrecognizable. It's almost like you can have a singularity just of difference, right? Just of not all the changes being these huge dramatic world changing things. There's just so many things that are kind of different, right? that the world ends up being radically different. It's true. That was a great show. That was a lot of fun talking with David Brin. He had terrific perspectives on things, I thought.
Well, let's think of how in the world could you make a science fiction movie that includes the idea of people not dying due to old age, there not being a problem with material wealth because, you know, I mean, you just basically things are printed out or things are so automated that, you know, material things are very, very, very cheap. And you know, we can alter our bodies in all these different ways, and we've got computers that, you know, wearable computers that are as smart as we are. I mean, put all these, you know, put things like just those few things together, and, you know, you can't hardly even make a movie out of that, can you? I mean, it's just too much. So,
well, you know, I think you could. It just it couldn't rely on endless action sequences, right? There'd have to be a lot of like dialogue and stuff, right? You know,
exactly.
It would have to be kind of intelligent if they really wanted to make a movie like, you know what I mean? It would have to be pretty cerebral. Although I think you can convey an awful lot in a pretty short period of time. I mean, you think about something like Blade Runner, right? When you first saw that movie, how thoroughly realized that world was, and it was pretty different. I mean, it was kind of it was kind of a cyberpunk world, wasn't it? Kind of dystopian cyberpunk world. And there were several things going on there, although we really only focused on the replicant technology. There was quite a bit of other stuff going on. But
like
you're right.
The off-world colonies and what that meant, you know, pretty much apparently, you know, the movers and shakers and you know, the great people had already moved off-world. And you had that going on. Obviously, I had flying cars and things like that. But, yeah, it was more than just replicants, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll throw one out. What was that, the fourth show, Humanity Transformed. Interesting discussion with George Dvorsky, and we didn't get into it as much the second time we did the show. That was the one that we lost and had to redo. But interesting discussion with George about a kind of a philosophical debate about whether uplifted animals and intelligent machines would all be part of something that we think of as human civilization, whether we expand the definition of human to include them or whether we expand the definition of person and human always means just Homo sapiens. It doesn't really matter, but from my perspective, I like the idea of broadening the human family. I like the idea that that human civilization becomes this thing that's inclusive of a lot more stuff than it used to have in it, because that's kind of the history of human civilizations. Like humanity used to mean – you know, you and me, and I'm not too sure about you, right? It was like, you know, just
you look just a little bit different to me, man. So you're not part of my tribe.
Yeah, people on this side of the hill, but definitely nobody at the top of the hill, and certainly nobody on the other side, right? And there's just been this expansion throughout our history of including more and more people that we think of as human. That humanity is increasingly something that we think of as being more cognitive and more moral than purely physiological. And if so, you know, could Data on Star Trek could you know, he always strove to be human. It's like I would have just said, "You're there. You're with us. You're one of us." Anyway, it's an interesting question about how we go forward, and certainly. You'll want to extend the definition of personhood to everywhere it's applicable, but I don't feel that I'm completely persuaded by George anyway that human isn't the right term either. You weren't in on that discussion, were you, Stephen, or were you?
I was not. For some reason I was absent on that particular recording, but it seemed like when we got back together with George, maybe I was. But I don't remember that particular conversation, so
yeah.
You're right.
But you're on my side, right? You take my side, right?
Yeah. I find it foolish to argue against you often, Phil, so I'll just stick with you, buddy.
Well, you're the one with the mute button.
I can always just go beep. No, Phil. Well, I'm not sure that it's a distinction that has any – that will have much – make much of a difference in the future. You know, I mean, it's, I think there'll be sentience and there'll be things that are less than sentient. You know, there'll still be animals like we have animals today. But, you know, I think sentience is going to be the real key thing. So,
oh, I agree. What makes it interesting is that there are people who are human, and then there will people who will be descendants of humans, and there will be people who will be modified descendants of humans. Eventually, there are going to be individuals who have taken a leap so far that someone's going to say they're not human anymore, right? There's going to be this line where we say, well, if you've pretty much, you know, replaced all of your DNA with kangaroo DNA or whatever, right? You know, whatever it is, if you've gone totally cyborg or you know, whatever this extreme kind of thing is, are you still human? And to me, it's like yes, right? Because if you started out human. You know, you remain part of the definition of human. So I guess it's kind of like
kangaroo
the ultimate...
DNA. I wanted the kangaroo DNA. I wanted a place to put my laptop. You know, so I just. You know. Kind of mad.
Exactly. It's so handy. The wallet's right there, and you don't look dorky with the fanny pack or any of that stuff. But But seriously, I think that to me it's just it's kind of the ultimate expression of that, right? It's the ultimate expression of if you can't quit humanity, maybe you can join. That's my thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, we don't want to spend too much time on that. What you got another one? Another interesting moment from the series?
Well, it's an embarrassment of riches, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, I got another one while you think.
Yeah, go ahead.
The show Reality Transform. To me, it's these points of contention that stick out in my mind for whatever reason. The points where I was disagreeing.
Yeah,
with,
that makes it, contention makes it interesting. Which one are you thinking about?
On Reality Transformed, when I brought out the idea that maybe insane people have kind of, you know, cheap access to virtual reality, this was not well received.
Yeah,
not well received by the panel.
There was a member of our panel who had a loved one or somebody that she knew that had you know, I forget the particular diagnosis, but doesn't matter, and almost took offense at it. And so, am I remembering it correctly?
That's correct. So. But I didn't feel that idea was well received elsewhere on the panel either. And it might have been just because she set the tone. But I stand by it. I actually think that delusions, not to make light of anyone who suffers from that or to have fun at the expense of the mentally ill, but I think the fact that delusions exist show that there are significant shortcuts through our brain circuitry. This is the point I was trying to make. Significant shortcuts through our brain circuitry towards achieving big pieces of subjective reality experiences. That was my point. Your brain can be fairly easily tricked into thinking it's experiencing something that it's not experiencing. You might not have to spend all the bandwidth on the full holographic display and all the servers churning out all the AIs who are doing all the convincing stuff. If I'm convinced that I'm seeing all these different individuals, it really doesn't matter how realistic that is, right? That's my point. That the fact that, and maybe dreaming is a better example, it probably is, but the fact that we can have delusions and that we can dream, both those facts to me indicate that there's probably huge brain-based shortcuts into virtual reality. You know what's great about being the host of the show is we get to come back like 3 weeks later and have the last word on these things.
Exactly. That's one of the wonderful things about it. I'm sure you've seen the Jim Carrey movie Truman.
The Truman Show, yeah.
Yeah, the Truman Show. Of course, the idea there was this guy is raised from a baby as part of a reality show, and he doesn't know he's in a reality show. He thinks that the world that he's experiencing is you know, unscripted. You know, it's just the world just like the rest of us. Of course, the world he's experiencing would be obviously a fake to you and I, Phil, right?
Right.
I mean, if we were to wake up in Truman's world, we would quickly realize
that
we were inside of a dome,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And we would.
That's not really the sky, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the sky. The sunset doesn't look like that quite, you know. And exactly, we would figure it out quickly. But the point, I think, one of the points of the movie is he had never known anything different, you know, and he had been raised with that reality. I think that maybe something like that is the case for people that are suffer from delusions. I mean, what their mind is telling them is as real as what our minds are telling us. Now, that doesn't make it right, you know, but that for them it seems awfully real. And so,
exactly.
I get the point you're trying to make, and I don't think it's offensive at all. I think that, that particular point did not go very well with
the panel didn't take it well, but I'm standing my ground. I think there's something there. And come to think of it, hypnosis probably too. People these very compelling subjective experiences via hypnosis, and of course drugs.
You know, in that same exact show, I did not have time to bring up something that I wanted to bring up, and here's the deal.
Oh, go. All right. Now
okay. Here, when we have completely convincing virtual reality, I think one of the things we will want to do is trick ourselves into not remembering our life outside that virtual reality, allowing ourselves to have a completely authentic experience of being a Roman. Well, the only thing you can you know, if you're going to set up a virtual reality where we're living in Rome, even for like a day or a week or whatever, we can't, if it's going to be an authentic experience, we can't remember that we're from the 21st century, you know?
Right, right.
And I think that's, and so, anyway,
yeah, I mean, if you want to be a gladiator in the arena, it will, you know, as painful as the virtual experience might be, it'll never be as real as you might want. God knows I would not want to do that, okay? I would never sign
up.
But
I'm going to tell you, there's going to be people who will.
Yeah, but for people who would really want to experience that, if you remember that you're actually sitting at home with electrodes strapped to your head, it kind of ruins it, doesn't it? I mean, it just you're not having that full experience. And to that extent,
so we're going to delude ourselves. We're going to happily delude ourselves when we have that kind of virtual reality. I really believe that.
I think you're right. And to that extent, it is much like a delusion or a dream, because it's in dreams that you know. I mean, the greatest moment in some dreams is when you go, "Oh wait, this has got to be a dream," right?
Yeah, exactly.
But if that happened in a VR, you go, "Oh wait, I want my money back," right?
Yeah.
I just realized I'm not really a centurion in the arena. Yeah,
I can't really be a secret agent on Mars, you know.
Exactly. Okay, so that was a good one. And then let's see, anything else that leaps out? Well, I should talk about our final show, Human Destiny Transformed, our peek into the far future. We probably had two shows there because we had our interview with Kevin Kelly, which was awesome. But with the panel that we had leading up to that, it would have been better if we'd had the full 2 hours just for those guys, because it seemed that we were really just getting to their scenarios for the future when we had to cut that short. So if I have a big, I won't say regret, but a big lesson learned from the World Transform 2, it was probably that show that we tried to pack. We tried to pack too much into the final 2 hours. The Kevin Kelly interview is, I think, just one of the just it is the perfect way to end that series. But would like to have given Vanessa, Robin, and John each the opportunity to flesh out their ideas a little bit more than they did. So if you guys are listening, you're of course all welcome back anytime, and it would be great to have all three of them back to explore those ideas a little bit further at some point.
And maybe even individually, so that we could just hear from each of them, you know. So exactly.
Yeah. Well, as you know, we can talk to John Smart for 3 hours on that subject and still feel like we have plenty more to talk about. So, well, that's okay. That's all I've got. Any other parting thoughts on the World Transformed?
I'm up for World Transformed 3 at some point. And
we're doing it in odd years, right? So 2013.
Okay, 2013, World Transformed 3. Okay, sounds great.
we'll have to. So we had about 25 guests the first time, about 30 guests this time. Both sets of shows ran about 15 hours. Actually, the second one ran about an additional hour and a half, so about 16 and a half. The first series ran about 16 and a half hours. So we'll have to decide how many people and how many ideas we can fit realistically into how many weeks of doing it, because I have to say that I was pretty tired by the end of it. I'm not going to say nightmare. It's a logistical challenge, a unique logistical challenge making that thing happen week by week. There's some cat herding that has to go on to get everybody together when we do get them together. And I think if you tell me that we're doing it again in 2 years, that sounds pretty comfortable to me. I'm ready to take it on in 2 years. Okay, good. So we're going to leave the World Transformed then. We've spent plenty of time on that. What else we got to talk about this evening?
Well, we wanted to get on some lighthearted topics. You've seen a movie I have not seen this summer. It's Cowboys versus Aliens, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on that, because it's just I don't know, for whatever reason, I just never got up the a huge amount of desire to go see it. Now, you know, you got James Bond and Indiana Jones, you know, I mean, for crying out loud.
Yeah, what is your problem, dude? Okay,
I should have been there. I don't, for whatever reason, I just, you know, never went. And so I want to, you know, was it awesome? Did it suck? Was something in between? What's up with that?
Well, I'm going to tell you before I go there. I have to swing back just for a moment to the World Transformer. I can't log into chat, so I can't respond to Sally on chat. But she's suggesting we do a mini series just on the far future between now and the World Transform 3. I think that's a great idea. We'll probably we'll try to do something like that, and we'll also get the monologue series back here sometime in the next few weeks. But so swinging it back to your question, here's what I think. Let me tell you the good and the bad of Cowboys and Aliens. Okay, good, you already said, cast, and it's not just those two guys. I mean, there's Michael Carradine is in there. It's a great cast all the way through. Roger Ebert wrote a review. He said, you know, if you take the aliens out, you've got a setup and the perfect cast for just a really good Western here, and it's completely true. They could have made a straight Western that would have been awesome, just with the resources they had. Title, right?
You know what would have been great? Is to have a straight Western with Daniel Craig with that thing on his wrist and not ever explain it.
Never mention it.
He's got this huge
machine.
He just
happens to have this thing on his wrist, okay? People were more accepting back in those days, yeah. Title, one of the great titles of all time. Cowboys and Aliens. Do you remember?
You kind of know what you're going to get, you know?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, you can't act surprised by that movie. Do you remember a post I did? It was probably 5 years ago on my Vampire Planet series. It was like,
I've slept since then, so you're going to have to remind me of some of the details, but yeah.
Well, I don't really have an idea for the book. I just think the title is cool, and then I had all these like sequels, and you know, to me, the ultimate sequel, the ultimate drive-in movie based on the Vampire Planet series would have been Gladiator Rebellion on Vampire Planet. Doesn't that sound like an awesome movie right there? What's hilarious about that is, I'm just stream of consciousness now, but at the Mensa meeting on Friday, one of the people at the table I was talking to, a friend of theirs has just published a book called Vampire Planet.
You're like, kidding.
No. I'm like, that is going to be huge. That is a great title. tell your friend to get in touch with me if he has any questions about what to do in the way of sequels, because I've already got the whole series planned out for him. But I'd like to think that he got the idea of reading The Speculus, but probably not. It's probably one of those ideas that had to happen.
Picking up the same psychic radio somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, Cowboys and Aliens, you can't argue with the title. My problem with Cowboys and Aliens is it goes back to one of the discussions you and Michael Darling and I had years ago on Tales of the Paranormal, which is that aliens are just not as bright as they need to be. Okay, as I've explained it multiple times, aliens are stupid. Okay, and the aliens in Cowboys and Aliens, they've got vast technology, they're very powerful, and they're idiots. Okay, they. I'm sorry if this is spoiling it for anyone. You had all summer to see the movie, but they're here for the gold, all right? And I'm thinking that there are better, easier places to get gold than down in our gravity well, all right? You know, we got the asteroid belt out there, right? Full of gold, if you want gold. I'm pretty sure they could get it there. Worse than the bad aliens, though, a major character turns out to be an alien. Okay, and I won't say who, so I won't spoil that part, but someone that we don't expect to be an alien, well, I sort of expected, but somebody who ostensibly we don't expect to be an alien turns out to be an alien. And when this individual reveals his or her identity, there's then this plan to let's go after the aliens, and this person is obviously from a civilization that has vast technology, interstellar travel, is always your dead giveaway. Oh, okay, we can travel between the stars. But also some really advanced nanotech, like bring myself back from the dead kind of nanotechnology and other stuff, came to Earth to help the cowboys fight the aliens. Okay?
Okay.
Brought no weapons of any kind. Right? I'm like, you know, just bring the weapons and you don't even have to help the cowboys, right?
Yeah,
so
just arm them, yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that having written The Speculist and having done this show for so long, it just kind of ruins me for a lot of this kind of stuff. I watch it and I immediately go, you know, you've got nanotech. You don't, you know, I guess my response is more nerdy than geeky. I can't enjoy a movie like Cowboys and Aliens. Actually, I did enjoy it. I enjoyed it a lot. I took my dad to see it, and we had a great time. But I want it to be smarter than it is, I guess. That's my that's my ultimate problem with Cowboys and Aliens.
You know, it's sort of like some of my teachers back when I was going through school, you know. He had such potential, you know.
Exactly. yeah, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, right?
That's exactly
the ultimate criticism. This movie is not living up to its potential. That's exactly right. Well, let me swing that around and talk about something else real fast, because I know you've got a summer movie you want to report on too. But speaking of things that don't live up to their potential, this is a good opportunity to talk a little bit about H+, what is it called? Humanity? Now I've forgotten the name of the show that I went to Comic-Con to talk about. I'm embarrassed. It's H+, the digital series, excuse me. Because both premiered at Comic-Con. And Cowboys and Aliens, I think I might have put a picture of this up on Facebook. I'll put some of these pictures up on The Speculist. The Hilton Hotel there at the San Diego Convention Center, the entire hotel, the entire north-facing wall of the hotel was a poster for Cowboys and Aliens. Okay, it's like this, I don't know, 40-story building. The whole thing was a poster for Cowboys and Aliens. It had its premiere Saturday night of Comic-Con. I didn't get to go see it then. I went to see it a few weeks later with my dad. But meanwhile, at Comic-Con, another event that was occurring was H+, the digital series, was being previewed there, along with Mortal Kombat, a new digital series around Mortal Kombat. So that was kind of fun. I was on a panel that was half H+, the digital series, and half Mortal Kombat. Our time on the show was talking about H+, the digital series, and I was the show. The executive producer of the show is Bryan Singer, the guy who made, you know, Usual Suspects,
X-Men.
The X-Men movies, Superman Returns. And I was there on a panel with the makers of the series. The director is named Stuart Handler. Two writers, guys named John Cabrera and Cosimo De Tomasi. And one of the producers, one of the guys who works for Bad Hat Harry Productions, for Bryan Singer's production, a guy named Jason Taylor. Great bunch of guys. And they had reached out to me, sent me an email a few weeks before Comic-Con and said, we're looking for somebody who can come talk about transhumanism, because that's what our show is about. And I said, sure, I'd love to go to Comic-Con. So we had a conference call about a week ahead of Comic-Con, and sure enough, they invited me out, and I got to be on this panel at Comic-Con talking about this show, which was just a wonderful experience every way you look at it. For one thing, I got to hang with these like guys who make a TV show, which was great fun. I got to be on stage at Comic-Con with, I don't know, hundreds, thousand, I don't know how many people out in the audience, and talk about the things we write about at The Speculist, talk about robots, monkeys controlling robots with their minds and stories like that we've written. And I got to go on stage right after Stan Lee. Stan Lee had done his panel, and it ended, and then we came out, and I, like, walked right past him. He's like, he's coming out with his entourage, and I'm going on. And it was like, wow, there it is, you know. There's my warm-up act. Stan Lee has left the stage, so now I'm, you know. I'm
just
ready to.
That is just too cool.
Yeah, I'm ready to go talk to the Comic-Con crowd. But it was just, it was a blast. It was, Stephen, I'll tell you, it was everything you think it is, okay? It's plus. I mean, it's just this huge swarm of people. There are people dressed up as stormtroopers and slave Princess Leia, as I wrote, everywhere. I bought some comics, bought some souvenirs for the family. I posted pictures up on Facebook of just walking around the show floor. I spent one afternoon doing that, and got my picture taken in front of Doctor Who's spaceship and with R2-D2 and C-3PO and with some superheroes. And it was just a geek nerd blast. I mean, it just, it was
Doctor
as fun
Who's
as...
spaceship? You mean the TARDIS, right?
Yeah, I do mean the TARDIS, his time ship, his spaceship. For those who aren't familiar, okay. The TARDIS. That's my picture,
right.
Actually, up on the Speculist. Me, if you're wondering why I keep showing pictures of myself in front of a phone booth, if you don't watch Doctor Who, anyone who doesn't watch Doctor Who, that's the TARDIS. That's what it looks like. But just to talk briefly about this show, it's very exciting. What these guys have done is really unique. These webisodes are short. They run just a few minutes at a time, and they've done like a feature film's worth of them, and they've got the first series is ready to roll out, the first season. And I've seen the entire first season except for like the last critical minute and a half. So it was all leading up to something, and the battery died on the phone, and that John Cabrera was showing it to me on, and I still haven't seen the conclusion of the first season. But what I did see is just absolutely one of the most intelligent and, I'm going to say, suspenseful and well thought out, well crafted pieces of TV that you or just cinema or, you know, whatever art form you want to say this falls into, that you'll find anywhere. It's really cleverly done. The story has to do with a near future technology that something we talked about on the Humanity Transform show. Provides the ability to link directly into the internet, and a large part of the developed world opts into this technology. People are using those, you know, this interface to the net the way we currently are, you know, kind of the way smartphones have taken off, right?
Well, and you know, you can imagine your disadvantage if you choose not to do it by comparison to those who do, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. I've often said that Google is part of my brain now, but Google really is part of your brain at that point. You know,
it really is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I look at that and I go, "Shoot, I'd take it. Sign me up. I'll do that. I'll do that tomorrow." Well, great. And a lot of people are just like us who would do it in a heartbeat. And a good piece of the developed world signs up for it. And then one day, and this is not a spoiler because if you watch the trailer, you learn this. Everybody who's online dies. Okay. So something goes horribly wrong, and everyone who's hooked up to this technology is killed. And the series deals with trying to understand what exactly happened, who's behind it, and there's interesting suspects. There's this Luddite faction. There's the guy who developed the technology to begin with. He's one of the he is as close to a protagonist as you can have, because it's this huge ensemble of people, and we see the story unfolding all over the world. And there's ramifications globally for what's happening here, because different parts of the world adopt technology differently. And one of the things I was saying to these guys, yeah, you know, you think about it. If it's like smartphones, and everybody who – think about it. If it was smartphones and everybody who had one died, well, if that hit the U.S., the U.S. would be, you know, devastated, absolutely, right? Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, they would be annihilated, right? I mean,
right. They'd be gone, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there would just be nothing left. And I think that they didn't tell me, and you don't get into those countries in the first season, so I don't know. But that appears to be the case. And one of the interesting things is who's left in the world? Well, Africa, right? They didn't have the kind of technology adoption rates, and suddenly they're poised to become a big player in the world. And it's really interesting to watch. The show takes place everywhere from we cut back and forth in time to anywhere from 5 or 6 years before the event occurred to 5 or 6 years after it occurred, and to the day it occurred. It's got a lot in common with a show like Lost in that it's a large group of people and there's very mysterious things happening. But I think it's I think they know how it ends already. We're looking forward to having these guys on the show probably in the next month or so, and we'll get into it more then. But I did want to say that there was something that I saw that I felt fully lived up to its potential, and look forward to seeing a lot more of it.
Well, excellent. So when is this going to be rolling out, and when and how is it rolling out?
Well, it's a digital series on Warner Digital. So it's actually you log into the Warner website, and every week you can watch a new episode once it starts. And last I heard from those guys, I'm checking in with them now. Supposed to start sometime in October. So assuming it does start in October, we'll try to have them on same week or right before to talk about the show as it premieres.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait to talk to these guys and to see their show.
It's going to be cool. You're going to really enjoy it.
I have seen the trailer, and I'm going to tell you that those of y'all who haven't, we definitely need to put a link in the show notes to the trailer, or just have the trailer embedded, because if what Phil has said doesn't, piqued your interest, it certainly will. It looks awesome. High production values. It looks like something that it doesn't look like some web series that somebody threw together in their backyard.
It looks like a feature film that Bryan Singer would have produced. Absolutely, it does.
Exactly, it looks like something that you would pay money to go see in a theater.
And the scope of it's set all over the world. It's a really ambitious production.
Yeah, that's very cool. Can't wait to talk to these guys. Yeah.
So speaking of Comic-Con, I haven't seen Captain America, and I haven't seen Green Lantern, but I did see Thor. So I think between the two of us, you and I saw two-thirds of the major superhero movies. Is that right?
That's all I'm on. When you got kids my age, you did see
Green Lantern?
Superhero list. Oh, yeah.
You saw Green Lantern? Okay, so I know that Captain America is better than the other two, but between Green Lantern and Thor, which did you like better?
Oh, easily Thor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so easily Thor.
So Green Lantern's the big loser, huh?
I thought it was not excruciating.
There we go.
But it, I didn't want to poke my eyes out, but it didn't live up to its potential. Green Lantern is a great character. And basically what you're talking about with Green Lantern is alien tech that's like, nanotech that can be anything you want it to be kind of thing. It's utility fog before Josh thought it up. Somebody in a comic book thought it up kind of.
Right.
What the power ring is.
We're at the stage in this world now that we at least understand what Green Lantern should be. It's not just magic. We can sort of imagine what the technology would be. We should be able to do like this almost realistic version of Green Lantern today. But
right.
Sounds like no.
Well, and some of the decisions they made with it were, and I didn't think it was bad. Some people didn't like the suit because the suit was CGI. Okay, he glowed and he had this green glow about him all the time because the suit was. Is an add-on like to his skin, basically, and I thought that was a neat decision. I didn't have a problem with that at all. There was, but some people did. That wasn't what I disliked. I mean, one act was, one of the bad guys. I mean, spent the movie screaming. Screaming in pain, screaming in anger, he had one emotion and it was rage, and he screamed the entire time, and I was so glad, and it was not because they developed a character that I hated, cathartic to have to have him killed. I was glad that I didn't have to hear him anymore, and I can't imagine myself watching the movie again because it has zero replayability factor for me because there was other things too. I mean, there were some strange decisions they made, I like the cast. I thought Ryan Reynolds is a good choice for Green Lantern.
Maybe they'll reboot, but keep him. Exactly.
Like
he's a big star and everything. So
writers, keep him and try again. I'd be on board to go watch somebody else's take on it. So. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's not spend any more time on Green Lantern. You've made me glad I didn't see it. Actually, let's switch to Captain America. That one I haven't seen because we can both talk about Thor when we get to Thor. Now I've heard Captain America is just awesome.
It is awesome from beginning to end. It is. I have a sort of a top echelon of comic book movies that I really, really enjoy. You know, Superman 2, you know, both Batman Begins and the Dark Knight Returns. Am I getting it right?
I think it was just The Dark Knight.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mean, those are top echelon, and everything else, you know, is kind of wannabes, you know. I would put Iron Man, the original Iron Man.
Sure.
In the top too. I really enjoy the original Iron Man. Well, this, of course, is a companion piece to Iron Man and Iron Man 2 and the latest Hulk. And, you know, they all fit together. And why do they fit together? They're leading up to next year's The Avengers, okay? Captain America is in this fictional universe. He is the first Avenger. He is the first attempt at a super soldier that was successful.
Right.
And just a great movie, and I mean, even great morals for the kids. I mean, he is a hero before they give him the flag serum.
Right.
And they demonstrate that. You know, I mean, he may be a weakling, 90-pound weakling, but he is an absolute hero from the moment go. You know, Steve Rogers is a great man in a little man's body. And then when he gets the great body, he's even a greater man. So just a good, uplifting story, well done with the period pieces and everything. You know, and what an odd choice. You know, he's fighting in Europe and in World War II, so who would you expect him to be fighting?
Well, I'm going to guess the Nazis in Europe.
Yeah, I would expect that too. He's obviously fighting in Europe for, you know, a while, you know, at least a year or so, takes place in this movie. And the best of my, you know, best I can tell, single Nazi the entire time. So, there's like a splinter group that's sort of like this, you know, anyway, it's, you know, I thought that was a strange choice. You know, why, you know, Nazis are easy guys to, you know, to continue to fight. You know, I mean, you're not making, I don't know, what were they going for? Playability in Germany? I don't know.
Nazis should be the universally workable bad guys.
It's your go-to bad guy, you know? It's easy to make them.
And when you do a World War II movie set in Europe, yes, I agree. And especially if it's Captain America. I mean, if it's Captain America or, like, if it's Wonder Woman set, period, right? Wonder Woman set back when she was first, you know, conceived, or like Superman. If they did a Superman movie set back in that time, all of those, you would expect them to be fighting either the Japanese or the Germans, right? It just would make sense. Because they did in the comics, but
exactly. So no, they for whatever reason they didn't. That is the closest I will get to a criticism. Otherwise, it was an excellent, excellent movie. I think you should you know, first chance you get, watch it. You'll enjoy it. I think it comes out on here in about, you know, I'm talking just a few weeks. So you don't have to wait long if you want to just catch it at home. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to see that. Okay, well, that then takes us to Thor, the one that I did get to see, which I enjoyed thoroughly. I loved Thor. I thought it was, and I've never was a big Thor comics fan. I mean, I read it a few times, but never really followed it. So this was almost kind of an introduction to me to the character, or like a reintroduction. And of course, these movies always do sort of create their own version of the story, but. I really enjoyed it.
You know how they came up with the sort of a kind of a behind the scenes thing with Stan Lee, since you mentioned him earlier. You know, the whole purpose of Thor, they had made the Hulk so powerful that, you know, who can we get to battle the Hulk, you know?
Oh, right.
And well, you know, let's
you'd need
a god.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway.
That's
but,
interesting. I did
know,
not know that. So that's they brought that's, Thor out of mythology in order to be able to fight with Hulk.
Exactly. That was.
I always thought of Thor as kind of Marvel's closest thing to Superman.
Yeah.
Because he's blue. He's got a red cape. He flies. really strong, you know, comes from another world, different, but, you know, still. What I really liked about Thor was I loved the little tie-ins to the Iron Man to the Avengers universe. I loved the cameo appearance by Hawkeye, because my daughter and I we go see these movies together when I do get to see them, and I'm like, you know who that is, right? And she's like, no, and I'm like, he's that Marvel's version of Green Arrow. I couldn't think of the name, because I'm really more of a DC guy growing up, but I couldn't think of Hawkeye's name. But that was cool that he was in there. I thought, well, that's cool. I know we'll see him again and he wasn't referred to by name, right? He was just this guy with a bow.
Right.
so all these little things going on, but without the superhero story, you've got this really kind of interesting fantasy mythological story going on. Loki was an interesting character. The Frost Giants, I thought, were interesting. I mean, Anthony Hopkins is great. I mean, he just chews up the scenery with that kind of stuff, playing Odin.
I couldn't imagine a better casting for that. You know, I would think, you know, you'd have to get him or maybe Sean Connery. I don't know who exactly you would get to be. That could have been any better, though. That was perfect cast.
Yeah, it was just about as good as it could have been, and just a lot of fun. I would like to have seen even more stuff, like when he finished the coffee and slammed the cup down. Things like, you know, this guy with basically these Viking sensibilities trying to fit into America, you know, 21st century America. I thought
walks into a pet store and says, "I need a horse."
Yeah. What's the guy say? Oh, we have dogs, cats, and lizards. Well, any of them large enough to ride? Like, this guy is not from around here, right? You know, that's terrific stuff. Well, anyway, so big thumbs up on Thor. Definitely need to see Captain America, and better luck next time on Green Lantern, it sounds like. So actually, I guess that's probably taken us just about to the end of our time. We want to leave time for the music. Any parting thoughts there, or should we just jump straight to the music?
I will go straight to the music, and it's been fun, and look forward to getting together again next week, same time, same channel, right?
Absolutely.
Our music this week is from a little Austin band called Wire Tree, and the song is Tiny Hearts.
Tiny Hearts by Wire Tree. All right, well, thanks for putting that together for us, Stephen. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back again next week. We're going to be talking about the upcoming Singularity Summit, either next week or in the coming weeks. And we'll also be talking about H+, the digital series, as soon as we get that scheduled. So I hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming shows. And until next time, live to see it.
Bum 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 b